So when I was asked by Father Daniel to talk today, a little while ago, I was thinking, what do I do? And then my husband just said, well, talk about life. Talk about your life. Talk about what you think is important. We've been married with Father George for almost 20 years. We'll be 20 years this August. So I put my thoughts together and decided to start with this. Yes, I see puzzled face. What is this, Masha, right? Like, why are we looking at a mountain? This is the tallest mountain in lower 48 states. 14,500 feet. Taller mountains are only in Alaska now. So it's in Sierra Nevada in California, 11 miles up, 11 miles down. You can hike it, you don't have to climb it. First climbed by three local fishermen in 19th century, and they decided to name it the Fisher's Peak. And of course, the geologist said, no, we can't name it Fisherman's Peak. We will name it in honor of a geologist, and it stayed Mount Whitney ever since then. Well, let's see. It's a beautiful view. In 2014, a year and a half ago, my son John and I decided to attempt Mount Whitney. So we waited for a permit for about 2 years. We prepared, read some books, drove 3,000 miles from New York to California. The 32 hours in the car was not that bad. While coming here to Texas was longer to California. And we started up that mountain on August 7th at 11:45 p.m., not a.m., p.m., to give us enough time to get up that mountain. So let's see. This is a picture of John right before sunrise. It's about halfway up. If you can see, if it's above tree line, nothing, no trees, no brush grows up there. It's August, and you can see some patches of snow, and we actually on the top we played a little fight of snowballs because there was fresh snow up there. So, see. There is a question. Yes.
So did you climb all night? You started 7:45 p.m. and climbed throughout the night?
Yeah. First in the dark, the first half, we didn't even see where we passed, what we passed. It was, yes.
Are you aware that the lowest point, Death Valley, and it's the second lowest point on Earth, you can see from Death Valley, the top of Mount Whitney. And when the pioneers were crossing the desert and dying of thirst, they could see the snow.
Snow, wow.
When
driving to Mount Whitney, we considered going through the Death Valley, but then thought, if our car breaks down in Death Valley, it's going to be the end of us, because they said it takes a couple of days for anybody to find you there if you break down there. So it's not some cell phone that you call and say, or help me, AAA. So we said, we're not going to risk, not a new car. So we just decided to try Mount Whitney. So, but I thought the question would be, why Mount Whitney? It's a family talk. We're talking about family. Well, I love hiking. And because we thought about, what do I like? What do I do? I'm a matushka, I'm a mother, I'm a wife. I love hiking, I love mountains, I love nature. And when I started thinking about family life, I'm a very visual person, as you can tell. Those are my pictures. In my mind, I thought I would kind of make a parallel. Let me see. Would be nice to have a clicker, but that's all right. So Mount Whitney, married life. It's a journey up the mountain, and it's a journey that starts only with a wedding and continues your whole life for the married life. There are dangers for both. There are benefits for both. And of course, there's the ultimate goal. Why do we do it? Why do we climb mountains? And why do we get married and choose family life? Well, to get to the top for the mountain, that's kind of easy. If you ask anybody, why do we climb? We get to the top. And if we ask why to get married, you guys actually are a smarter group of kids than probably with an average group of kids nowadays. If I asked anybody outside of this circle, many people, and actually I teach in high school, so I do talk with a lot of guys of your age, and a lot of kids would tell me it's for love, for happiness, for a beautiful wife, a handsome husband, successful children, future stars, want a great job, I want a big house on the lake, you know, drive a nice Ferrari car, go to Europe for vacation. So what usually on average kids would tell me what they're looking for in married life. Well, after Father Daniel talked today, after Father Sergei talked today, and you guys are a little bit different group of kids, so you know that this, what I would call a shiny top, is not the actual goal, the ultimate goal of marriage, right? Of family life. And Father Daniel put it very well today. There are other goals. This is not the goal, the ultimate shiny top that we want to reach. Actually, the same is with the mountain. When John and I set out to climb that mountain right there at the top, we would love to get to the top, but the goal was a little bit different. So let me keep making my parallel. All right, so marriage is wonderful, climbing mountains is wonderful. Then why doesn't everybody do it? Well, there are certain dangers in the mountains. There are certain risks in marriage, right? So the mountains, I can talk about mountains for hours. So I would just quickly say, storms, lightning. Actually, one of the first people who climbed Mount Whitney was killed by a lightning while having lunch. Because once the thunderstorm starts, it strikes whatever is above ground. And if it's you, it will strike you. So when the lightning is there, you go down. You don't go up. Bears, mountain lions, if you fall and break a leg. Altitude sickness is a nasty thing. It fills your lungs with liquid and your heart can fail. So there are a lot of things that can happen to your body. People die on the mountains nowadays, 21st century. Two of the worst things that can happen, some people give up, just lay down and die, and that happens for real. Just the will to live is lost. Or they get peak fever, and that's also even worse because getting to the top at any means, whatever the danger is, if it's lightning, if it's anything, I have to get to the top, and then it's risking your life, really unnecessarily. And for marriage, risks of marriage, you name it, we see it all around, right? Money troubles, loss of job, car, house, somebody gets sick, somebody dies, happiness is gone. Have you heard this on TVs? I don't love her anymore. I don't have to be married to her. I don't love her anymore. The love is gone. Infidelity, drugs, alcohol, violence, divorce, somebody brought it up. There are lots of risks, right? In New York State, you can get married at 14 years old. I'm not sure how it is with other states. 14 years old, with permission of parents, you can get married. Starting at 16 years, you don't even need permission of parents. So we have a bunch of kids here. And you guys, thinking about what you need to do in life, you're still not married, which means you take this seriously. You're not just rushing to the shiny top with the house on the lake and the beautiful wife, right? And it's not that you're so scared of the risks, right? You're too young to be scared yet, right? But let's see. So, if we're superficially talking about, again, reaching the top of the mountain, will everybody reach the top of the mountain? No. Right? Every day, probably 200 people set out to go up Mount Whitney. About half of them, maybe less, will reach that top. Hopefully nobody will die. Some people do, but hopefully nobody. But then the shiny top in marriage, right? That's what I called, with a beautiful wife and the house on the lake. Will everybody get that in marriage? No. Then the question, if we didn't get to the top of the mountain, did we fail? Well, the answer is only, yeah, we didn't get there, we probably failed. It depends what the goal was. And then if we didn't get, you know, the wonderful
little kids and nice Ferrari in the garage. Did you fail in a marriage? No, because we keep the ultimate goal of marriage in our minds. And if we do that, as Bishop Peter said, you know, life becomes less complicated. So let's see.
So what is the ultimate goal? Let me continue the parallel with the mountain. Greek mythology, heroes go on quests to do what? Not the final goal somewhere to get that golden fleece. It's about the hero making the journey and what kind of person he is, right? He becomes. When you go into the mountains, it's a quest. It's a personal quest. Become stronger, better, wiser in a way. What kind of person you will come back? Will you betray someone on the way? Will you help someone? Will you share your last drop of water? Or will you get to the top no matter what, leaving your friend behind with a broken leg, right? But you have to get to the top. So it depends, you know, safely get home. And also safely get home people who were trusted to you, your friend, my son, for example, right? Somebody with whom you travel. Marriage. By now, you probably would give me this list. What's the ultimate goal? To live your life according to God's commandments together, to serve God together, to seek God's will together, right? Salvation together. And to safely get home, which means what? To enter the heavenly kingdom, right? And if you keep that ultimate goal in mind, things start to fall into place. And things like talking about love, kindness, all those wonderful things right here become more meaningful. Why do we do that? Including self-sacrifice that we talked about this morning, right? All right. So, that's the ultimate goal. Remember Star Wars, right? Everybody saw Star Wars?
No.
Not yet. Not everybody is interested in Star Wars. But if you know Darth Vader, if you haven't seen it, remember he loved his wife. She was pregnant. And he thought he needed to do everything in his power to save her and the unborn child. He even agreed to sell his soul, let's call it sell his soul, to the dark side, just to preserve her life. But if he thought about this, right, would he ever turn to the dark side? No, because he would remember, even if she dies, even if her life is in danger, even if he dies, the child dies, still, this is above everything else, right? Okay, so let's forget about Darth Vader. Let's forget about mountains. Let's say you found that other half, right? Whatever you like, whatever you decide to do, this is the person you're going to marry. It's our kind of like whole dream of this fairy tale wedding. It's actually also my picture. It's my niece getting married last May. Anicia, that's her now husband. Beautiful wedding in New York City, wonderful dress, lots of guests, very prayerful service in Synodal New York City. It was wonderful, right? They were getting the God's blessing to start their life together. But we know that fairy tale weddings, wonderful, beautiful, but then the day ends and the real life starts, right? How do we live that life? In Russian, the word spouse, who knows slovo supruk, the word supruk, right? Have you ever thought where the root comes from? Supružestvo. Supruga. Upresh. Upresh is something you put on a horse to harness a horse into a yoke. So the word suprugi, harnessed into one yoke. Also a spouse, a partner, helpmate, and yoke fellow. We never think about this.
Yep.
So how about this picture?
Marriage.
Russian
hospital.
All right. Not very romantic, right? Okay.
Are you sure? Maybe they're in love.
Is this better?
Yes.
Okay. All right. By the way, it's a painting by one of the Russian painters, contemporary painting. Can you see where he is and where she is?
Yes.
Yes. This is he. He's the leader. He's,
you know. Oh, I thought it was the
husband. Right? He's there. The burden is on his shoulders. And here she is, right? Help, support, do whatever it takes, right? Well, it's a nice painting, but of course I'm joking because we're talking about people, about sacrament, right? So this is kind of to see the point. But for real, who is this? Somebody mentioned it this morning, right? Yes. Yes. This is an example of marriage that's pleasing to God. They both St. Peter and St. Febronia became saints through marriage. They lived long time ago, 7 centuries ago. We still remember them. Celebrated on July 8th. They didn't have fancy palaces. They didn't have fancy things. They didn't even have children. And nobody said that their marriage failed. No, on the contrary, their marriage was pleasing to God. Well, how? Why? Well, because they probably kept that ultimate goal of marriage, salvation, as their primary goal in life. And actually, if you guys have not heard of them, I do ask you, please read, look up their lives. It's very interesting, and for us, it's very, very good to read. So if we keep the ultimate goal of marriage in our mind every day, it becomes easier to see the direction our lives should be taking. Things start to fall into place. And we should remember that it's a journey. There is no one set thing. I can't give you instructions like, Vanya, you need to do this to have a successful marriage. There is no such thing. True. But if you have those values, things start to fall into place. It's a journey. We talked about mountains and quest, right? We talked about what kind of person I am, what kind of family are we going to have with a spouse, with a husband, or my wife, whatever you guys do. And just remember, living your life according to God's commandments together, right? Serve God together, seek God's will together, salvation. All right. So now we talk about everyday life. So I thought I would start with this. Icons help us remember about God because we tend to forget. We watch television, we go eat, we go play with the friends, we go on the computer, we come back, we kind of even forget about this. But the icons are there in our home, hopefully in every room, and we need to pray. We need to make time for it. Father Daniel once, when we talked, said we would not leave our house in the morning without brushing our hair and putting, you know, nice things on ourselves, you know, look nice before we leave, having breakfast. We should not leave the home without praying and feeding, kind of nourishing our soul. And those words stuck with me when you said that, Father Daniel. So icons do help us remember. By the way, this, again, is my picture from our house. These are our wedding icons from Russia. They've been in my family for a few generations. This is St. George and St. Elizabeth, our saints. This is our son's saint, St. John of Kronstadt, St. Alexei. Actually, it's an interesting story. You see the board?
on the wall where the icons are kind of, you know, see the screws. When we moved into this house about 10 years ago, we thought about putting up the icons in the best corner of the room for it to look nice. So my husband, John, was younger, probably Alex was kind of somewhere under the beads trying to help. I said, oh, we're going to do it. So they worked really hard, they painted, they did something. I had other things to do. Finally, they called me into the room and said, okay, we're done. I think we're done. What do you think? And I'm sitting there, without the icons yet, sitting there, seeing on the white, beautiful wall, two plywood panels screwed into the wall. The beautiful, beautiful, thin wall. Screws, they're kind of, you know, the whole room is white, and this is wood color. I was like, what do you think? Look, it's going to be so easy to hang, you know, put the screws in and put the icons up. I'm standing there, speechless, thinking, boy, my husband spent so much time, my kids helped. I can't tell them, this looks awful. And then I thought to myself, what's more important, the white wall or a wall where we can put up icons the way we want them, so, you know, they don't fall off the wall, they stay there. So it took me a few seconds, or maybe a little bit more than a few seconds, and you are speechless. That's a good idea. Okay, let's put the icons up. I didn't realize that my husband still didn't know about my reaction. So when I was putting up this presentation, kind of sharing my ideas with him, he said, you thought that? So that's the story of this wall.
And then icons in the children's room. Our kids probably picked most of the icons they have there because they're saints. Actually,
Father Daniel, do you recognize, and those of you guys who were here last conference, do you recognize this?
Oh, yeah, we made those.
That's the icons that you guys made. So John brought it with him.
Blessed
the icons, the icon of the church. It's part of their icons corner. So praying with the kids, I just wanted to say it's important. We think we don't have time for it, but the way we model ourselves to our kids, think about your parents, think about you as future parents, that's when we teach them the most. Not tell them, go to your room and pray. Here is the meaningful slope, go, read the prayer. It's hard for us, it's hard for the kids. If we do it together, it's much more meaningful. We usually light a little candle that changes the mood right away. Sometimes we have a candle from the church, sometimes that's actually a candle from the wedding of our niece. So they have a few of their favorite icons, including the Saint Gerasimus icon with the lion. The boys were fascinated by the lion, weren't they? They were young. So, and then when we think about family life, we should always think about church life. And the words that I put up there are thoughtfulness and keeping to the golden middle, doing it with love is probably something that we try to think about. Various issues that come up. Do we go to church every Sunday? Well, think about the ultimate goal. If you think and keep the ultimate goal in your mind, salvation, our souls, do we go to church every Sunday? Yeah, we should, definitely. Holidays, we definitely should try. Sacraments, christening a baby, right? Confessing, taking communion, and the way we behave, our kids think that that is the norm. So we model, you will be modeling for your kids. Some mothers worry about coming across on a little baby, right, with a string around the neck. I haven't personally heard of any stories, anything wrong happening, but if you're in doubt, you have a priest in your parish. Go ask the priest. Talk to people who've been there, who's done that. Cross and sports, some people ask some teachers,
coaches ask to take off the cross when you do sports, gymnastics or play football, swimming. Some schools wouldn't allow you to participate if you didn't take all the jewelry off. Talk to your priest. Talk to other people. Talk to the school. What is possible, what's not. Lent. Right? Some people say little kids should not have Lent because it will upset their growing organisms, their growing bodies. Some people say, no. Whatever we cook at home, kids eat, and there is no issue, there is no problem. Talk to your priest. See where you are personally. Think about thoughtfulness, the golden middle. Think about doing it with love, right? If your kid thinks Lent is torture, then something is not really right. We all kind of sigh about Lent, but on the other hand, if we keep the ultimate goal in mind, why we do it, things start to fall into place. Birthday versus names day, right? Your saints day, right? What is more important? Thinking about the ultimate goal, our salvation, what is more important? Name days, your saints day, celebrating your saints day, trying to go to confession and trying to commune on that day. Yes?
I'm just curious, how many of the kids here know who their saint is? Bravo.
One thing I would like to tell you is that sometimes families ask around and try to say, what do you do at home? How do you do it? And then they think maybe we're doing something wrong. They're comparing themselves to other families. That's a kind of a little tricky road to take. Think about your family, your husband or your wife, where you are at spiritually in church life. Are you just starting? Or are you both really involved? Talk to your priest and find your own way. Don't look at some other family. Don't say, oh, we got to do this, and we got to be like them, and they're doing this, and we should, or this is... So don't do this. Think about your life and your family, about you, and how you do it. When you think about holidays... Well, Easter in church. Some people celebrate it differently, right, kids? We had this young boy who was able to go through the whole Easter service. He was falling asleep right there almost, but he made it. He was very happy that he made it. Here is after the service, we always have a feast. This is John, you know, our girls from the choir. Oh, and somebody just does that. That actually, Alex, a few years ago, just sleeping.
Just a few years ago.
Just a few years ago. People are afraid to take young kids to church to the Easter service. They say it's the night, it's too long, they will not be able to go through it. Whenever young families bring their young kids to our church, I've never seen anybody leave in the middle of the service saying, my kids can't take it anymore. Either the kid falls asleep, there's like a little corner for the kid, or they're open-eyed, whatever happens. If you think, you and your spouse thinks that this is important, you just pray. You rely on God that everything will work out. Prepare. And you go. And things usually work out. I've never seen an Easter service not work out with a family with young children. Christmas, wonderful. New Year, which one? Right? Because the
real
official New Year, January 1st, is usually during Lent. Right? Our Lent, Christmas Lent, that's coming up, the New Year's that's coming up. There is a new year on the old calendar, but we don't usually celebrate it that much, right? There is a church new year that starts which month?
September.
Yeah, so which new year are you going to celebrate and how?
All of them.
You decide. You decide. Yes.
I just wanted to clarify, I'm sorry to interrupt, but this idea of celebrating New Year with a glass of champagne Do you know where that came from? Well, not champagne, all, but to celebrate it with a drink and merrymaking. Do you know where that came from? The pagan Romans believed that if they met the first second of the new year happy, the whole year will be happy. And we know that that's nonsense. But that is a pagan, you know, tradition with a glass, happy new year. It doesn't, every day is a new year.
Yes. But the same thing if you think about Halloween.
Yeah.
And we have families who are on the brink, like, well, kids want to put up a costume. Well, think about the big picture, where this holiday came from the pagan past, right? This is not a holiday for us. There is nothing for us to celebrate there. So if your little kid is trying to celebrate, you're kind of not sure, explain it to the kid. See why we believe this, right? So that's why I put up like a question mark next to Halloween, because people do ask. People do ask about this.
Vigil for St. John of
Kronstadt. Yes. St. John of Kronstadt, yes. Best. Thanksgiving. Do we celebrate Thanksgiving? People tell me, oh, this is not Russian holiday, this is not church holiday. But what's the essence? Think about the ultimate goal. Is this a good holiday for us?
Yeah.
Giving thanks. What could be better, right? Giving thanks. We have Thanksgiving Malebin often.
Chicago.
Again, you have doubts, guys? Talk to your priest. Figure things out. St. Valentine's Day. Quick question. I usually ask, what saint are we celebrating? And then people can't really answer. They don't have an answer. And then what are we celebrating? Влюблённые, lovers? So think about things like that. Again, have doubts. Go to your priest. Ask, talk, figure things out. Think about it. Okay? All right. Think about family traditions. You will be creating those traditions. We actually put best china out. We have like a wonderful celebration for Easter, for Christmas. We actually have a Lenten yolka, posna yolka, now in our house. Lenten yolka means that's the tree we put up, but only with little lights on it. And we put all the beautiful toys only right before our Orthodox Christmas. So during the new year, the Christmas tree is there, but it's so sad without toys. It's just with little blinking lights. We don't put up, you know, real decorations. But right before Orthodox Christmas, it just lights up with all the toys and everything. That's our little tradition at home that we came up with. But again, you will be doing this in your home. Think about it with love, the golden middle, thoughtfulness. All right. So we talked about all the wonderful, good stuff, holiday celebrations, but is life always good? Is it always happy? Or even at your age, you guys know, things happen. Things happen. Saint Ambrose of Optina, Svetoy Ambrosii, said this, that a continuously happy life produces extremely unhappy consequences. In nature, we see that there are not always pleasant springs and fruitful summers, and sometimes autumn is rainy, and winter cold and snowy, and there is flooding. We saw flooding on the way here. And wind and storms. For the most part, in times of plenty, man forgets himself, but in times of various sorrows, he becomes more attentive to his salvation. And now we think about things in life that can happen.
Aww.
Illness of a spouse, of a child, addictions, death in the family. Parent can die, child, spouse. Those are hard times and that's when we are kind of tested. Do we really remember about God? Do we rely on God? Do we remember that there is God's will? Or do we just become desperate and we fall into depression? We kind of forget about the ultimate goal, the goal of our salvation, right? Child with a Down syndrome, child with autism, for example, it's hard. Can't say it's easy. We've known families with kids with Down syndrome. We've known families with kids with cancer. It is very hard. When I was growing up in the Soviet Union, a child with Down syndrome, for example, would be born, and the parents would be told by the doctors to not take the child home, to leave the child in the hospital and just go live their life. They don't need to burden themselves with a sick child, they were told. That was a common practice in the Soviet Union. And they said, just go have good, healthy kids. Forget about this one. The government will take care of this kid. And the kid would be put away in some special home where the kid would grow up without much love, unfortunately, without much care. They would just be hidden away somewhere, just fed, basic care. And that was a very sad reality. Yes?
Is that like a
demanding
thing to do,
like,
to take a child if they wanted to?
Are you asking if that was voluntary or?
Yeah.
It was voluntary. But the culture was not orthodox. The culture was very materialistic. And if you think about this, it's a burden on the family. It's really hard to take care of this child. And it's easier to get rid of this child, especially if the government gives you permission to do that.
I just wanted to share Saint Nikolai Dmitrievich, the Serbian saint, was asked once, why does God punish children and allow illnesses? And he said, God doesn't punish children. They don't know the difference. If a child has autism, he doesn't know the difference. The ispitania, the test, is for the parents.
And if the parents were in the Soviet Union without a church, without who felt him at all in mind, maybe even to give up. And they were not bad people. That's what was the culture. They didn't know any better. And they did have other kids and lived their happy lives until they would get older. And they would start remembering the child. And now there's a lot of stories when such families are now looking for those kids who are now grown up and they're reunited. They just like to show it on TV as some kind of attraction, which is very sad too. But again, that was the country without basically kind of religious view. When I moved here to America, I was very surprised to see how differently people relate to kids with Down syndrome, with autism. Most of the families raise those kids, take care of those kids. They see that those kids are people, they're worth even, whether by God or circumstances, whatever the family believes in, and they raise those kids. You can see those kids in school, so you can see them in the store. They grow up as adults, they work as cashiers, maybe some of them, right? We see them in our society that we didn't see back in the Soviet Union. But also in Orthodox families, sometimes you can hear that, again, it's very hard. A child with autism, a child with Down syndrome, cancer, it's hard. But then you can hear the parents saying, you know what? A child, such child is a gift from God to us. I've heard parents say that. And they say it is a gift from God because the God thought that we can handle this. We can love this child enough. We can take care of this child enough. That we're a strong enough family to raise this child. And actually in Russia, pre-revolutionary Russia, in the back in times before the Soviet times, such a child would be considered in some families a blessing. So the God gave this blessing to this special family. Again, it's very hard to raise this child, especially back in times with no special doctors, no medication, no help, but it was considered a blessing. So,
This can strike any family at any time. Father Daniel talked about things being out of our control. Things happen. We can choose a husband or a wife, but after that, we can't choose our kids.
I know that, sorry, John, to put you on the spot. I love to embarrass you.
But John was born with a lifelong illness. He has hemophilia. It's a bleeding disorder. And he's very open about it. If you talk to him, he'll tell you all about it. He's fine. I remember when we got the diagnosis. It was hard. I cried. It was such pain that, you know, this little baby, 6 months old baby, I'm holding him in my arms. And I thought he was perfect. I thought he was wonderful. Now he has this hemophilia thing. Is he going to die? Is he going to live? I remember holding him. And then that same day, it was actually my birthday when we got the diagnosis. My 25th birthday. That's how we celebrate getting John diagnosed, unfortunately. But we were driving home. There was a huge storm. Inside of us, it was a storm. It was hard. And outside it was lightning, and you know, trees were falling on the road, and we barely got home around the trees from the hospital. We're sitting there all in turmoil. But I didn't remember to pray at that moment. I was just in turmoil. And then my husband was sitting there. And tell me, you know what? If anybody in our family had to get a child with hemophilia, it's good it was us. And I'm looking at him thinking, just say, did you hear yourself? I didn't say that out loud, but my first moments were like, are you crazy? Why did you say that? They started thinking. Remember, you have to stop and think first. Same thing with the wall with the icons. I stopped myself, I thought. And I thought, he's right. And I felt such support from him. Being there and saying, it's going to be okay. It's going to be hard, it's going to be okay. So for me, I calmed down. I looked at my baby and thought, well, he's perfect. Doesn't matter if he has hemophilia, we'll figure it out. He's perfect, he's here, he's alive, he's going to be fine. My husband is right there. And together, he and I will do this. The rest is history. Here is John.
So things like this will happen in your life, guys. Seek support. Trust in God. Be in your parish, with your priest, with your family. You're not alone. God is there. If things like death occur, well, think back. People used to have 12 kids. My great-grandmother had 12 kids. Only 6 survived. That was very common. Young kids died from childbirth, after they were born, after diseases that now simple antibiotics can cure. But I thought to myself, like, my grandmother had to bury 6 kids of her own. Now to us, it seems like a huge tragedy. Even if one child dies, it's very hard on the family. Back then, it was not easier. You can't say that it was easier for them to bury children. No. But it was a different outlook, a different reality. First of all, it was a reality of life. But they didn't fall apart. They didn't go crazy because they had to bury 6 kids in their family. 6 survived. And they had the right outlook. They looked correctly. God, Бог дал, Бог взял. So God gave us those kids. If God was willing, was God's will, to take some of them very early. And addictions is a separate category there. Alcohol, drugs, tobacco, video games, gambling. I put it all together into one category. This is more ailments of the soul. This is spiritual. Talk to priests. Without God, without church, it's not just a physical illness. It's with cancer, you go for treatments, and also you trust in God. With addictions, that is a harder burden to bear, and you need more help from the church, from the faith. All right. Now a little bit happier transition.
Well,
as I'm kind of getting closer to the end, I wanted to tell you a little story about St. John of Shanghai. That's his picture. He lived not that far long ago. I think he died when you were born, right, Father George? 64, 61. I'm trying to remember, but he lived very recently. And the story has to do with Father George Larin. And Father George Larin, we know him very well. He's serves in Nyack, New York, runs our Russian school. He loves telling.